right, the band is back together this weekend on Nevada Backcountry. David and I kind of went our separate ways. We were each out there walking the walk of shame, I suppose. Any sheep yet? Yeah.
No. Well, we saw sheep, but no sheep on the ground.
Okay, well,
we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that coming up. We'll talk about use of drones, airplanes, etc. in hunting. There was a case just in Las Vegas. This episode's going to be kind of all over the map. We'll touch on the chucker stuff. We'll do a recap on my hunt. If anybody out there has any good tips on what to season a tag with, I'd like those. And as always, show brought to you by Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, Out West Buildings, and Truck Envy. So let's just call this first segment Extended Housekeeping, Dave.
Yeah, so there were three individuals down south that were convicted of using a drone to harass a very nice mule deer off of private land, and as it crossed into public land, one of the individuals shot the deer.
Yeah, and it was a bomber buck.
It's a really nice 5x5. But no matter what, I mean, it's completely illegal. You know, if you're not going to follow the guidelines and the hunting rules, then maybe you should take up pickleball or
something
like that, badminton, something, mini golf. They were caught and they were convicted, all three of them. There was a $15,000 fine, and they have lost their hunting and fishing privileges in the state of Nevada for 5 years.
What are the actual regulations? I mean, I know you can't herd deer, and I think you can't use a drone during the season, right?
No, you can't. You look at a lot of the regulations, like for wilderness travel and stuff, you can't use ultralights, gliders, drones, nothing in those locations. And you can't use them for hunting purposes or even scouting purposes.
Okay, so not like Alaska where you can't hunt within X amount of hours of getting off a plane. You can't scout with aerial stuff,
no.
None of that.
No, it's considered a sense of harassment.
Okay, you know, fair enough.
If any of you have, or if you've ever flown a drone, because I've done it several times. And
just my kids' like toy thing in the backyard.
The ones that I've used are the larger professional ones. And it does. It sounds like a hive of bees.
Oh, yeah.
They're loud. It's a sense of just harassment when you start flying around and trying to find animals and what have you, and you start scaring them or spooking them. It's not allowed.
You know, I had an interesting experience on my hunt, which we'll get into next segment. I actually had a stalk blown by a helicopter. It was National Guard, and I'm assuming they're doing some kind of training or something.
Probably.
But I'm creepy. And I mean, I was still like 300, 400 yards out, but this helicopter came in flying what's called nap of the earth. So that's the military term for it, but it's basically like flying 50 feet off the deck, flying like the curvature of the earth. And they were just racetracking around two mountains out there. And this went on for like 3 hours, but I watched, man, they blew the deer out big time.
Oh, wow.
So I hiked back to camp and watched them. So anyway, I don't know how I got on that. I'm still a little out of it from that hunt. But so no scouting whatsoever. You couldn't take an ultralight and go out in June?
No, not if you're using it for scouting purposes. Now, there's nothing wrong with just taking your ultralight out and flying around and having a good time and doing whatever it is you want to do in an ultralight. But if your purpose is to use it to go scout for animals,
locate
game, and that's big game. If you're trying to find chucker groups, you just can't do that.
Because I know, especially out in that northern Washoe County area, those ranchers will fly fence lines with ultralights and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's they're using it for the purposes of their business. A couple years back, I was on a hunt with a good friend, and we were out on his bull hunt. And a guide service, which I won't mention, they were running around these three particular canyons in an ATV with the exhaust cut, because there was supposedly, the talk was that there was a significantly large bull in that area, and most likely they trying to
get the client on
correct.
It or whatever.
Correct.
Okay.
So all of that's considered harassment, even if that is like outright harassment.
Okay.
That's
so any
all of
use
that stuff
of,
is illegal.
Any use of vehicles, drones, ultralights, whatever.
Noise, using those big air horns to try to push animals off. Say you're on the boundary of a hunt unit, you know, in between 12 and 13 or 34 and 12. You know, there's that road that separates them, which is most of the units in the state. But if you're trying to use some type of a mechanism to, beside your own body, you know, you can walk towards the animal and they'll move on because you're going to spook them. But if you're using air horns or ATVs or UTVs or, you know, whatever it is to push them into a location so that you can harvest them, big fat no-no.
Okay, when you say push into a location, like push them out of a unit to harvest them?
Yeah, to push them out of, say, hypothetically, one unit, have them cross the road into the unit that you have a tag in, and then you shoot them? No.
But, like, I've been on hunts before where it's like we know this deer is down in a patch of timber or something, and, okay, a couple of us are going to just basically push that timber and see
dogging.
If a deer...
You're dogging, but you're not using air horns or drones or an airplane or anything like that.
And not trying to move them out of the unit, just trying to figure out, hey, we saw this buck go in here at first light. Let's walk this hillside through the timber. The guy with the tags over here, if it comes out, he's going to smoke
That's dogging.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
totally. I'm good.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I don't have to edit that out.
Yeah.
Okay. We've talked before about like shot placement, shot selection. There's a moral compass, I guess, that goes into hunting when your only judge and jury is technically the wilderness watching.
Right.
You
just
know,
ethics.
Ethics, right. But I don't understand that mentality of, let me use a drone or whatever, like to herd this to where I could shoot it. I'm trying to go with this basically is like, I don't understand what's broken there sometimes where it's like, you know, if you're not willing to eat a tag at the end of the season, like just don't go out in the first place. I don't like doing it.
Yeah. No, none of us do. I mean, we go out there for a reason.
Right.
We hate eating tag soup, especially these new tags. They're chewy.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't break down like the
old. A lot of calories.
Yeah. And they don't break down like the old school tags that were made out of that paper stuff.
Right.
This is more like it comes out the same way it goes in.
Yeah.
So that's
not good.
That's not good. If you have to use means that shows that you have zero talent in hunting to harvest something, then, like I said, take something else up, man.
Yeah, pickleball was a good
pickleball's
suggestion.
A good...
I forgot to mention this right up front when we started. So I posted a video to our Instagram account. And for people that don't know me, I don't know if I'd call it a sense of humor. It's not very good. But I posted a video of me walking out after a blown stalk. And I said something to the effect of, I should take up backgammon. I don't know what backgammon is. I mean, I've seen a box. I don't know how you play any of that. I got to give a shout out to Snyder's Taxidermy. I can't vouch for their taxidermy, but I will tell you, whoever runs their Instagram account, absolute heart of gold. Nicest people in the world. He hopped on there or she hopped on there and posted something like, don't quit. You got that. Gave me a little pep talk in the comments.
Nice.
And I was like,
I saw that. That was cool.
For people that don't know me, he thought like, oh man, this poor guy's really going through it.
Yeah.
Whereas it's just kind of my personality. I was like, man, I'm picking cactus out of my feet. Like this sucks. But I enjoy doing it. But they hopped on there. So,
oh, that's cool. Well, thank you, Schneider. That's very nice to try to keep Henry's
motivation high
so that we don't find him in a ditch somewhere with a bottle of something next to him. You know,
how do
knows?
You shoot yourself with a bow? I don't know. But no, I thought that was pretty cool. So, hey, shout out to Snyder's Taxidermy. I was not being serious in that, but I appreciate, like I said, can't vouch for the taxidermy, but absolute heart of gold human being.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Let's I looked at the time here. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into my hunt and that long walk of shame. Don't touch that dial. We're coming right back on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. All right, thanks for hanging in there over the break. Let's jump right back into my mule deer hunt.
Yes.
This was a tough one.
I loved your updates, by the way.
Did you like those?
Your constant text to me.
Oh, good.
I've got three below me.
Oh, you know? I was sitting up on that ridge and we were texting.
Yeah, you and I were texting together. Yeah.
All of a sudden they stood up.
We should be hunting instead of like 12-year-old girls in middle school. Like,
texting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, next year, let's put it in as a party. And yeah. I will tell you, this unit, let me back up because I've already said the name of the unit on air. Everybody knows where I had a tag. Holy smokes. I don't want to ruin my chances of drawing in there again by pushing it too much.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I found bucks, mature bucks, in that unit every single day of the hunt. It was awesome.
That's nice.
Yeah. It was really cool.
Next year.
And I posted a picture of the one that juked me.
Yeah.
Just didn't get a shot.
Sweet.
It was a good deer, man.
Deer.
It was a good deer.
I like the video, too, when you got, like, I think, does he stand up and, like, give you a look?
Yeah, stands up for a split second. Let me back up.
Let's back up. Let's start from beginning.
Okay, so from the beginning, you know, I was riding a wave of confidence. I don't know if I spent too much time on a couple bucks in that unit. I had found a really good big 3-point buck, the one I missed.
Yeah.
And then that really wide one I posted a picture of that was a real cool 4x5.
Yeah.
It was Can't nice. See in the picture, but yeah, he had an extra cheater on him. It was a cool deer. I don't know if I focused too much on those, but I will say, I think I could have gotten it done with a recurve.
Yeah. You were mentioning that.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of going through the compound versus recurve thing, and
yep.
You brought up a really good point, man.
There were a couple times where a deer stood up out of its bed, and either swirling winds, like the case with that big one, where the wind swirled and you see his head snap up in the video.
Yeah.
He knows something's not quite right, but he's not spooked yet because he can't see me. But it's like he pops up and then whirls and he's out of there. So when I was talking to you off air, you know, with a compound, there's a process as far as, okay, draw, hit my anchor point, nose touching the string. Okay, I'm centering the sight housing in my peep. I'm making sure my bubble is level. Okay, now I start breaking the bow apart and going through my shot sequence. Yeah. I think that cost me a deer this year. I think there were a couple opportunities that I had where a deer stood up inside of 30 yards, and if I had been practicing with my recurve, I could have gotten off that snap shot of just before they whirl and dip out, right?
Yeah, because the recurve shot cycle's much quicker.
Yeah, just hit, okay, keep pulling and snap.
Yeah, consistent flow, you come back, follow through, string comes out of your fingers, bing, bang, boom.
I think most people think of a recurve as a handicap, because you can't shoot as far or as far accurately.
Yeah, so I guess there's, you know, pluses and minuses on both sides of it. Like, to be honest, I never even thought about that, but that makes total sense on those snapshots like that where an animal does get up and it's like really weary because you didn't wear your Axe cologne.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have kept him solid for a while. He would have been like, dang.
Smelled a dose of M-A-N. Yeah. So overall on the hunt, holy smokes, cool unit, cool deer. Unsuccessful, obviously. I made the joke in the first segment. If anybody's got some good recipes for tags, I could use it. The other thing I was going to talk about is, holy smokes, I ran into a lot of hunters out there. A handful of other hunters out there. I can't stress this enough, because I ran into guys singing the blues out there. And of course, maybe this, I might just be a dishonest person, but every time I'd run into somebody, it was, oh yeah, some does and maybe a couple forkies. I'm not coughing up that I found mature bucks. So I would tell them that and they'd kind of go off. But what I noticed is there seems to be a reluctance out there. Maybe it's just the majority of hunters. They don't want to get off and work.
No.
I couldn't figure it out. You know, they were singing the blues, not seeing anything. And they could have been lying to me like I was lying to them. But they just were not seeing anything. And I will say, it was a hard season. We had a couple like monsoons that came through that put a damper on activity. I mean, just torrential downpour for days on end type stuff.
Yeah.
Food sources everywhere. Water everywhere. So.
Yeah. And that's not just deer, though.
Everything. Yeah.
Hearing that from everybody that's hunting everything. I spoke with a friend who had a archery antelope tag, sat in his blind 7 days. 7 days for 16 hours a day. Never saw an antelope. And then he got lucky on the eighth day. He had a small, well, as a mature buck came wandering in, and he got a shot, and he harvested. But he said it was, you know. But the thing is, everyone's seeing that because we've had such an awesome winter,
yep.
And then followed up by we got all of our rain plus an extra inch, all in the month of March.
Yeah,
you know, Nevada or Reno gets 7.4 inches of rain a year. And we got 8.4 in the month of March, and now we're still getting rain. We're getting green up everywhere. This sheep hunt that I'm on, helping my buddy with right now, where we're going is so green, you would think it was April. Everything is so green. There's water everywhere. There is food everywhere. These animals can go wherever they want. They're not restricted to really good food patches. They're not restricted by water.
And that was my, you know, now if I ran into those guys, I ran out there while I was hunting, I would tell them like, hey, the cooler of Keystone Ice, you could leave that at home. This is a season to get out there and get out on foot. There certainly, as I'm sitting here, I lost 18 pounds in 15 hunting days. I lost 18 pounds.
Yeah, your clothes are all baggy. Yeah,
I know.
You walked out into the...
Well, I looked at all the data afterwards, man. I did just over 93 miles on foot over 15 days. I lost 18 pounds, but I would say I think that I hunted it the right way because I saw mature deer every day that I was in that unit. I didn't get out as much as I would have liked to again. I mean, I didn't even go out. There was that one week where we had every single day torrential downpour.
Yeah.
And that ran me out of the mountains. I just said, I'm not dealing with this. I'll go home, hit the reset button, and then get back out here. Oh, one thing I forgot to bring up there's three people out there right now that are going to be listening to this episode that are yelling at their radio saying, Henry, you're an idiot. You could have gotten it
only
done.
Only three?
Only, oh no, there are more than that. But in this case, and here's where I'm going with that. I absolutely could have filled this tag, could have filled it on the very first day or second day. I had somebody kind enough to offer me access to private land with alfalfa fields that I could have, there were two, or there was one for sure, like trophy buck in there. There are a few smaller ones in there. So I did, like I said, somebody graciously offered this up to me and said, why don't you just come down, you know, take your pick of what's in the field and whack it. I did not want to do that. So, you know, hey, maybe next year, coming off a losing year, if I draw again and somebody offers up private land, I might do it.
Yeah.
But I had this thing this year for whatever reason. I knew because of my buddy's work schedule that I was going to be doing a bulk of it alone. And that's what I wanted this year. For whatever reason, I get weird stuff in my head, but I wanted that solo experience for probably 75%+ of it. I was by myself. I wanted to hunt the way I wanted to hunt at over 9,000 feet, hunt bucks in their backyard, in their territory. And I wanted to go for a mature mule deer spot and stock. I just did not want to sit on the edge of an alfalfa field and put an arrow through a deer. So with that, that's out there now. I absolutely could have gone and done that and, you know, probably patted myself on the back and said, look what a great hunter I am.
Yeah, well, I mean, you did it the way you wanted, so that's what's important. I mean, it's, you know, having the meat in the freezers, sure, that's great, but doing it the way you want is the bulk of the pleasure and the
100%
experience of it all.
And you know, by like day five or six when you're out there and you've been by yourself and you haven't talked to, like, I don't know, there's kind of a cool experience where it's just you out there doing it like that. I wanted that. I found I had a couple stalks where I got over there and the deer were out of sight. And I get over there and I'm like, man, there's nothing in that bed. They moved off at some point. I don't know where they went.
Huh.
But that, you know, it would have been nice to have a spotter somebody up there with me on those. They could wave me off and be like, nah, they're gone. But we got to get Tim Burnett back on the show because I know he's a solo hunter, obviously.
Yeah, that's his thing.
Yeah, he does a lot of that by himself. And I'd be interested in picking his brain on tips for that because I will say this was my first. I've always been with at least one other person. This was my first foray into that kind of living out of a backpack, doing it completely solo. And boy, it's hard. When we come back, let's talk about the sheep hunt a little bit. And then let's talk about Burning Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, buddy. It's going to get weird.
It's going to get crazy.
Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3. Buckle up, get ready to spark the white owl. We're going to get far out, trippy with it. Let's talk about Burning.
Did you just become a 70s DJ?
Hey, brother. Yeah. No, we'll talk about Burning Man in a second here. You guys listening, gals listening, probably know where Dave and I come down on Burning Man, but we thought we'd talk about it a little bit. First, let's lead into this with something relevant to hunting, your sheep hunt.
Man, my buddy Pat's California.
Yeah,
sheep
not
hunt.
Yours. Sorry, Pat's. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So we went out there for the first weekend. A good friend of ours, Timmy, came in from Arkansas, and
hell of a guy,
dude. Amazing guy.
Yeah. Shot at Redding with him. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he is fantastic. He'll be in Redding again this year. We just booked the house, and your name's on the list. So
fantastic.
Redding is going to be hopping again.
Good.
So anyway, so all three of us were out there, you know, three old guys kind of cruising around the mountains. It's a wilderness hunt because we're in area 034.
Yep.
You know, you got the Paiute Wilderness and the Black Rock Wilderness. And I do have to give kudos to Pat. Pat's in his 60s, later 60s.
Yeah.
And that dude, he took care of business. I mean, he got up there, he hiked those hills. He was huffing and puffing and struggling at times, but you know what? It was like that little choo-choo just, you know.
Kept going.
He just
Pat.
He just kept plugging up that. Yeah, heck yeah, man. That's what it's about. That's what it's about, getting out there. But we did, you know, we were up there for 4 days, and we did 24 miles in the wilderness, which was awesome. Some amazing country. The rams were much higher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we saw some ewes and some smaller rams. The larger boys were definitely much higher up the mountain and further into the wilderness. So we're going to head back out here really soon and see if the pre-rut is pulling some of them off the upper, you know, those upper areas and bring them down a bit. We did run into several other hunters that were having the same issue. Yeah. They were seeing animals way up high, nothing down low. And again, we had such an amazing winter, great green up. These animals aren't forced to do anything.
No.
I mean, they're not forced to have to travel to find food or water. They got everything where they're staying. So right now the game plan is we're just keeping an eye on these three pretty good sized groups of ewes because the boys are going to be coming.
You're starting to find sheep in there and see some good sheep. And
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, we saw. We met a really great guy, Mike. He has got the only non-resident tag. He's from Missouri. He is.
Whoa.
Yeah, he's a Marine.
Okay.
So thank you for your service. You're an awesome dude, and he is out there. He's retired now. Just man, this dude. He's getting it done. I mean, he's been all over those mountains, but he's a Marine. I mean, come on.
Now, as far as access stuff, is it getting a little better or is it still pretty bad?
No, the first day out, we had 14 hours of rain. So we went out in the morning. Okay. We're like, of course, you're optimistic. And we're like, no, I don't think the rain's going to happen. No, it's gray outside, but I don't think it's going to come here. You know, we're good. So we busted out, got up on the mountain, and it started raining. So we hiked out, soaking wet. We didn't think it was going to rain, so why bring your rain gear? That's just crazy.
It's Nevada, for crying out loud. Yeah.
So we went back to the camp and just hung out, plate yep. cards and stuff. And it rained for about 14 hours. And the roads went from really bad to insanely bad. I mean, washouts, that road from where we were to the highway near Burning Man, yeah. right above where Burning Man In-N-Out is, was just nuts. It just washed out, washboarded. Took me 2.5 hours to travel the roughly 40 miles from camp on the dirt road to the highway. It was just, okay. It was gnarly. Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm going to invite myself along because now that my thing's over with, in fact, I'll give her credit. I'll give her a shout out in the show right now. I got home from this deer hunt and my wife said, I think we should go out there for Pat's sheep hunt.
Oh.
And I said, it was like, I felt like I might have, there was entrapment at play or something. I was like, what's going on here? Like, what's
you're
his
like
name?
Thinking like Matrix or something. Yeah. Did I just go into
what happened?
Did I take the wrong pill?
No, she wants to get the kids out there.
What?
And so all of us come out, and if you guys can handle six Evans out there with you, we'd love to come out and help out. So that's on the table.
More eyes on the wall, more eyes on the mountains, better.
You brought up Burning Man.
Oh,
I'm going to say right up front.
Lord.
I hate Burning Man. I don't like, I get the supposed economic benefit. Man, how strong do I want to come on with this? Because I'm sure there are some people listening that go, I just detest the culture of the thing. I detest the environmental impact of the thing. I think it takes a segment of the population, and this is a broad brush thing, but the segment of the population that participates in that, they're all talk when it comes to the environment, when it comes to leave no trace,
they're
the same people. They go back to their condo in San Francisco and
or back to Europe or
wherever
in the world they are, because you get people, there's an airport there, flying people in from all over the place,
talk about their carbon footprint and how they're whatever this, that, and the other thing, and then they come and it's just a celebration of hedonistic nonsense out in the desert, and they could give a rip about that desert, that environment. They leave crap everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I can't stand them.
No.
There we go. Now, your experience when you were coming back, you said it was bad.
It was bad. So I came back on a day where they were coming off the playa from the event. So with all that rain we got, there were a lot of cars and RVs and stuff that were stuck. It was a mess. So the individuals that were coming off the playa, I got caught behind them all. I mean, not all of them, but, when I pulled up onto the highway and started driving down, there were just hundreds of vehicles in front of me. So I figured, well, I'm going to just
wait it out
and just drive. So the thing was is, people always say, oh, it's just a very small part of the population that doesn't respect stuff, and they throw their garbage and do this and that.
I'll bleep that out.
I mean, absolutely, you're wrong. You're totally wrong.
100% wrong.
Driving along, there was garbage on both sides of the highway from the point where they came onto the highway from the playa all the way to Gerlach, and then out of Gerlach all the way to darn near Wadsworth.
Yeah.
When you catch the freeway, there was garbage everywhere.
They could care less.
Right there in front of us.
Yep.
Just driving along, throw their garbage right onto the highway, driving down. There's busted up pop-up tents. There's tents. There's cots. There's chairs. I mean, the place was littered for the next 100-something miles.
It's going to be months of cleanup.
Yeah. And it's going to cost taxpayers.
So they can tell the rest of their tech bros about the transformative experience they had.
Yeah.
Leave no trace. Yeah.
The whole thing about the Mother Earth and loving it and supporting it and being there for it. And I dare any of them to go to a chucker camp or a deer camp where you've got 15 men and women who are out hunting a mule deer or on a big party hunt for cow elk or elk, or I don't care what you're hunting. Go to one of those camps, check it out when they leave.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to see
anything. It's going to be cleaner probably.
Yes. Because I can't tell you how many times I go out, and if I'm driving along and I see a can or a water bottle or something on the side, I'll stop and throw it in the back of my UTV because I don't want to see my backcountry turn into the Burning Man Highway.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
Well, how long, I mean, that's the thing on that playa. Those, I don't want to call them scars, but the tracks, the where it's all rutted out across the playa, that's going to take years.
Yeah.
To fill back in and recover. I mean, yeah. I can't say enough. I hate that festival.
It would be a different thing if it was truly monitored and it was cleaned up and they did like.
Well, hey.
So anyway,
on that note, we're getting played off stage, much like our president in Vietnam. Let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, let's talk Upland stuff, a little bit of the trucker survey.
Oh, yeah. Saw lots of them on this hunt.
Perfect. Hey, I'm going to need some coordinates.
Boom.
When we come back on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, and thanks to our show sponsor, Out West Buildings in Fallon. If you're anything like me, you've gotten the enough is enough speech from your significant other. Before you go out and do something foolish this season, get in touch with my guy, Irvin. He's got plenty of man cave options to protect those priceless mounts and might even help save your marriage along the way. Just go to outwestbuildings.com. Out West Buildings doesn't build sheds. They solve space problems. Whew. After that last segment, I got myself a glass of bourbon and a Tylenol so I can calm down and get my blood pressure in check.
But, dang right.
I don't like Burning Man. We'll leave it at that. Now let's talk about something I think we both like.
Yes.
Chucker.
Yes. My dog is freaking out right now.
Yeah. Hey, it is. I think it's going to be a really good year.
I think it is. I really do. The chucker forecast isn't out yet. It should be out pretty soon here. It should be getting posted on the Endow website here relatively soon, but it's still in review stage. But,
okay,
you know, once that's out. But I would say from the several spots that I've gone and done scouting and camping over the last 2 months or so, especially where we're hunting right now, man, there's a lot of chucker.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's young a lot
birds.
Of chucker. A lot. We saw one covey. It was crazy. Pat actually pointed it out that there were like three clutches. You could literally see the size variations of this. I wouldn't doubt if there were 50 or 60 birds in this group.
Yeah.
And you know, we were quite a ways into the wilderness, so you know, put your hiking boots on to get to these birds, but when those things came out, too, there was a small game guzzler that we were way above and kind of watching the small game guzzler, and they came off the rocks. But, man, anywhere from Pez size chucker.
The little fuzzy tanks.
Yeah, the little fuzzy ones that just, you know, look like they don't even have legs. They're just, like, rolling along.
It's like
along
tank treads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just cute little things, like hauling butt. Then the next group was the next age class, and the next group was the next age class, and then there's, you know, the moms and the dads leading the whole crew.
Yeah.
It was cool to watch. It was really cool. But
here's what I wanted to ask you when we got into this. I know that a certain amount of moisture is required for good recruitment and everything. When is that moisture is so critical? Is it while they're in the shell?
After. Generally, it's after the eggs have been, you know, they've already hatched and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Because if you get too much moisture and you start getting, you know, little patches of standing water or flooding,
mm-hmm.
if it's too much, it's done.
Okay.
They won't, you'll have a really bad recruitment.
Gotcha.
So that was one of the big worries, like in March or so, when we started getting all that rain. I was like, oh man, if this persists,
it's not going to be
this
good.
This could not.
Yeah.
But then it opened up and got nice out. And
I've just been amazed. Let me preface this with quail, but the unit I was in, coming up those creeks and draws to get up to where I wanted to hunt.
Yeah.
I've never seen so many quail.
Oh, yeah.
And what was amazing is it was all not quite the cotton ball with tank treads stage, but the kind of before they get colors teenager
kind
phase.
Kind of a goofy teenager.
The goofy teenager phase,
yeah. Where they smell.
Man, there were, and no exaggeration, I'm not one of those guys, you know, everybody knows that guy that says, oh, there was 100 birds in that covey. And you're like, man, that was maybe 30 at best.
Yeah.
No, I mean, legitimate, like you said, 50, 60 bird coveys of quail. I mean, wow. It was unreal. So
oh, wow.
I think this upland season is going to be really, really good.
I do. I think it's going to be pretty darn good because just about every place that we hiked into, we either heard birds or saw birds.
Very cool.
Which was really encouraging. And we saw, in some locations, we saw a lot of nice mature birds.
Big old egghead suckers,
oh,
yeah.
Just some really nice ones. Just up on those rocks, just screaming at you.
Yep.
It was fantastic. So I'm anticipating pretty good season. We went over another area, which is real close to where we're hunting. There was a nice couple out there that was camping, and their dog ran off. It was heartbreaking because the wife and even the husband.
Well, you mean ran off, like ran off for good, ran off?
Yeah, like ran off. Like they were hanging out one evening, you know, at their little fire pit, and all of a sudden their dog started barking and poof, ran off into the dark. And
I was smiling because I thought you meant it ran off like to get birds and then came back or something.
No, no.
It ran, R-U-N-N-O-F-T.
It boogered out. So one afternoon we thought, well, let's go over there. You know, we told them we'd go check where they were camping and, you know, because they left a pillow there and some food. And we went over there to kind of tool around. And we got back up near the rocks back in there, some of the canyons there. And it was just an orchestra of chucker. They were just talking all over the place. We're like, all right, got the old Onyx and like waypoint.
Yep. Yeah, drop that pin, buddy.
Drop the pin. So, yeah, I'm anticipating it's going to be a pretty darn good year.
Now, when's the survey come out?
Any day now? Coming up, yeah, it should be, you know, I'd probably give it another week.
Okay.
I would say to be proper review and then posting and such. But
what's the process for that? Like they go out by helicopter, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And foot.
Okay.
You know, and they'll go out to certain locations and
how do they avoid double counting? Just go to different areas? You know what I mean? Like if somebody on foot's in the same area and they say, I saw 134 and this,
yeah,
whatever.
But the surveys are organized to where, you know, a certain biologist is covering this area and another biologist is covering, you know, area B and another C, you know, so that you're not all
double
surveying.
Counting.
Yeah. You're like, oh my God, there's 75,000 chucker in this canyon. No.
Yeah.
You know, you're not quadruple counting.
75,000.
Yeah. You know, that's, that's because all of you surveyed the same group. They've been doing it for a lot of years. So they got it pretty dialed in. Mm-hmm. And then they take that data, compare it to other data, you know, your averages, your trend data and stuff. And then they can provide a really nice analysis of comparative from previous years. Like it's better than these years and the recruitment's this and the you know, so.
I was going to say, I know usually just those diehard, don't even put in for big game chucker guys and gals that hate that forecast, especially if the area they like shows a high count. Yeah, and then you got all the Barneys coming in. So I do know some people out there that absolutely loathe that thing comes out. Now, they love it when it shows the area that they kind of know being way down, and they're going, sweet, I've got a year to myself.
I got a couple honey holes that
Bingo.
I know birds are at. Yeah.
But I'll be honest, I'm kind of vice versa. I don't treat it like the gospel.
Right.
Because I've had those seasons where, you know, it said an area was down or something, and I went out there and it was like the best season I've had. So I don't treat it like the gospel, but I do think it is a good just kind of keep an eye on things and see how the population is doing.
Right. And that's basically what it's for.
Right.
You know, to help us determine the population. Is it trending up, trending down? Is it stable? What's going on? Do we have areas that are declining really fast? Or, you know, it allows the department to kind of gauge, you know, how well these birds are doing across the entire landscape. And if there's anything that needs to be done, if there are some negative things over a period of time. It's not like I have a downturn in 1 year and the roof is coming off and oh my God, we got to do stuff. It's over a series of years. If there's something that's like, okay, there's an issue here, good or bad, there's an issue here. And the good stuff is always nice to know as well. It's not like the department just goes, oh, That area is doing really well, stable and growing, and it's been doing it for X amount of time. Okay, leave it alone. No, that's then that gets studied because it's like, okay, what's triggering this? What's right. causing it to be so darn good?
Yeah.
And then you take that information, and then you may be able to use it in areas that are not doing well or declining, or an area that you're like, hey, maybe we should try to bring some chucker into this area because it's suitable habitat, but there's just nothing really here.
Right.
So
right.
it allows, it provides you a lot of cards in the deck.
Now I noticed too, the, well, where is it here? I got the sheet somewhere. The Huns are on there.
I have not shot one of those.
Oh, you haven't?
Have you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I love Huns.
Oh
yeah.
Man. I have never shot. I shot a mountain quail once when I was chucker hunting.
Okay.
A bunch of chucker jumped up and
I got some mountain quail spots
yeah,
too.
I shot yeah. my shots and hit one bird and it happened to be a mountain quail.
Yeah. They're but a cool bird. Yeah.
I've never harvested a hun.
Oh, Dave, we can fix that right away this season.
Let's
yeah,
do
let's
that.
Go do that.
Let's
yeah.
do that. Hopefully my dog will know what one is.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. no, I like huns. Got a couple mountain quail spots. So I did that for a lot of years and I just, man, could not draw anything to save my soul. So I got really, really into chucker and I found some good, and the best part is
some good spots.
They're not even mentioned on the thing there for
oh,
huns.
Nice.
Yeah. So we can
nice.
Go out and get you some of those for sure. Yeah. Well, hey.
All right, everybody. Hey, thank you, man.
And don't go anywhere because Tom Gresham is coming up next.